We're discussing lung cancer screening and detection here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There is new guidance on when screening should happen to detect the presence of lung cancer in people who are high risk, like longtime smokers who don't have any signs or symptoms of lung cancer. Are you a smoker in your 50s? Have you considered annual lung cancer screenings? How would earlier screenings affect your life or someone you love? It's 800-642-1234. Two UW Health physicians are joining us for the hour. Dr. Maria Daniela Martin is a thoracic radiologist, reading chest images and identifying lung nodules that could be cancerous. Dr. Martin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, and we also have Dr. David Cinetti with us, a pulmonary and critical care specialist diagnosing diseases of the respiratory system. Dr. Cinetti, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Well, Dr. Cinetti, let's start with you. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, this group of medical experts, has revised its recommendations for lung cancer screening. Can you tell us what's new?
Yes, absolutely. The Preventive Services Task Force has updated their recommendations based upon a new review of the literature. And the recommendations now include a broader group of Americans. The recommendations include screening for lung cancer using a low-dose CT scan for persons aged 50 to 80 who have smoked at least 20 years a pack a day over that time, and are continuing to smoke or have quit smoking within the past 15 years.
And Dr. Martin, what is new and different here? What were the old recommendations like?
Sure. So two things were mostly changed. So like Dr. Sonetti said, the age limit was brought down. So before we used to scan people that were age 55 to 80, and now we brought it down to 50 years old. And the amount of smoking was also brought down. So before we used to screen people that had smoked about 30 packs a year, and now that number went down to 20. And even though it doesn't seem like a big change, it actually doubles the amount of people that are eligible to be screened in the United States.
Oh, so millions of more people become eligible for an annual screening, Dr. Martin?
Exactly. Actually, the estimate is about 6.5 million people are now eligible with the new updated guidelines.
Dr. Cinetti, who is this task force, you know, and what weight do their recommendations have on the medical community?
Yeah, they're a group of national experts in cancer and pulmonary diseases, and their weight carries a significant impact on many, many decisions in terms of screening to help maintain the health of Americans.
And so, and it's been a number of years since they've updated their recommendations for lung cancer. Their last was 2013, Dr. Cinetti?
Correct.
Yeah. We're taking your questions this hour on lung cancer screening. We have Dr. David Cinetti and Dr. Daniela Martin. They're from UW Health. They're a pulmonologist and a radiologist, respectively. Are you now qualified to get an annual lung cancer screening? Have you talked about it with a physician? Do you live in a home with a smoker? Have you considered getting a screening due to secondhand smoke? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Cinetti, why do physicians focus on pack years, as they say? You know, what's significant about 20 or 30 years of smoking a pack a day?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, your risk for lung cancer increases with your exposure, your cumulative exposure to tobacco smoke. And so the pack year history is an easy way for us to talk about your lifetime exposure, and your risk for cancer. And so when we say 20-pack year history, that means smoking a pack a day of cigarettes each day for a total of a year, 20 times over for 20 years in a row or more.
So if you smoked a lot less than that, Dr. Martin, say just a half a pack for several years, would your risk of lung cancer be significantly lower?
Yes. I mean, the cumulative effect of smoking increases your lung cancer's risk. So patients that smoke more have more chance of having lung cancer.
And if you've quit smoking, say, several years ago, does your risk of cancer start to go down at some point? You know, when does that kick in?
Well, the effects of stopping smoking, you can see them in your body within the day. But yes, your risk of lung cancer decreases significantly to the point that if people haven't smoked as much as Dr. Sonetti described, then we think their risk of lung cancer is so much lower that they don't need to be screened.
Dr. Martin, when someone has a screening, as you say, you know, a low-dose CT scan, what is that like? Can you tell us about the procedure?
Yes, of course. So a low-dose CT or a CAT scan is a very quick and easy exam, and it takes about 10 minutes. Actually, the exam itself takes a few seconds, and it allows doctors to see the inside of your body with a lot of detail, much more detail than a chest x-ray, for example. And we can see small abnormalities, and the whole purpose of screening is we're trying to find lung cancers when they're very early and very tiny. So this exam is excellent for us to detect that. And you basically lay flat in a bed, and the exam is painless and non-invasive. You don't need any liquids or injections to do it. You don't need to limit your eating or drinking before your exam. You can do it at any time of the day, and you can go right back to work after or to go for the rest of the day. So it's really simple.
Dr. Sonetti, as you see patients with respiratory conditions, how often do you order these CT scans?
Well, we order them as often as we can in our highest risk patients as defined by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, our patients 50 to 80 years old with the appropriate smoking history. So we were really trying to get the word out, and we were trying to capture as many people as we can to undergo this type of screening.
Are you worried about false positives in this type of screening?
You know, with any screening, we worry about false positives, and that's particularly true for lung cancer screening. And that is something that we talk about before ordering the test. We need to make sure that going into this procedure that we realize that there is a risk for false positives, and that risk may generate some anxiety if a false positive is discovered. And so we talk about what that means and what sort of happens if a result is found. And the steps subsequent to that to try to sort out whether or not it's a true cancer that's found or something else that is actually not concerning.
We're discussing lung cancer screening and what early detection can mean with two UW Health physicians. We have radiologist Daniela Martin and pulmonologist David Sonetti there. Did your lung cancer screening turn up a concern? What did the scan find? What were your next steps? How frequently do you get screened? Join in with your questions about lung cancer screening, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute for more conversation about lung cancer here on the Ideas Network. We're We're discussing lung cancer screenings here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the American Cancer Society, usually symptoms of lung cancer don't appear until the disease is at an advanced stage. Current and former smokers run a higher risk of developing lung cancer. Do you have a yearly lung cancer screening? Have you put off your screening in the pandemic? What do you want to know about CT scans or invasive tests like a lung biopsy? Bring your questions, 800-642-1234. We have pulmonologist David Sanetti, who is board certified in critical care medicine, internal medicine, and pulmonary disease. Radiologist Daniela Martin is a board certified in diagnostic radiology. They're from UW Health, and they stay with us for the hour. Dr. Martin, can you explain for us what you're looking for when you read these CT scans? What does that entail?
Sure. When I have the images in front of me, basically lung cancers tend to present as little spots in your lungs. Most people may have heard the word lung nodule. So that's kind of what we look for. And as you do lung cancer screening, you learn about which nodules tend to have a benign look or a look that it's a little more suspicious. So just to put it into perspective, about 90% of the lung nodules that we see are benign, meaning they're not cancer. They mean they may be an old infection or a little scar that you have in your lungs. So we're looking for lung nodules that have certain characteristics, and we try to classify them according to a system that we have. And we give it a number. Every time you get screened, we give it a number from 1 through 4 based on how suspicious things look. Mm. And we make recommendations. So we will generate a report and we'll tell your clinician, whoever the exam, you know, things look great, we'll give this a number 1, just come back in 12 months. Or if something looks a little more suspicious, then we'll tell them. Usually what you do next is you tell them come back in 3 months or come back in 6 months and let's see how things change. Because most of the times what you find is not lung cancer.
Hmm. Is it difficult, Dr. Martin, to find these abnormalities on the lung?
Not in CAT scans. In chest x-rays, which was done in the past, it was very easy to miss small lung cancers. So when they're the size that we want to catch them, right? When they're very small. But with a chest CT, it's actually really easy to see the abnormalities. So it's an excellent exam.
Dr. Sanetti, when these, exam comes back, the CT scan results, and you do have a patient who has some abnormalities or a higher number, if you will, of concern, what are your next steps?
Yeah, so our next steps in part rely on what the radiologist's opinion about the level of concern should be based upon the finding. And then we decide on what the next best step is. And as has been mentioned, an overwhelmingly high proportion of abnormalities that are found on these screening tests end up not being cancer. They end up being false positives. And so usually the next step is another CT scan in 3 or 6 months to assess for any interval change.
But meanwhile, you know, the patient, 3 to 6 months, you're going through, you know, all of the what ifs. What if it is cancer? Do you talk with patients about wanting to be more aggressive in figuring out what's going on?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, we talk about the risk of any particular nodule being cancer. Some nodules are going to look very suspicious for cancer and are going to require a biopsy right away. But most, like we talked about, are ultimately going to be benign nodules that are found incidentally, are not suspicious by CT screening on their initial assessment. And then we talk about the likelihood that we're were wrong about our initial assessment. And we talk about the results of these big studies that have been done in the past looking at these types of nodules. And we talk about the fact that most of these end up being false positives. And we also talk about the time interval between scans, often 3 months, is a very, very small fraction of time, even when dealing with suspicious nodules, and that fraction of time waiting has a very, very, very low risk of changing the overall outcome should this nodule end up proving to be a suspicious lesion that is ultimately diagnosed as cancer.
I'm going to reintroduce you two. We're talking with a pair of UW Health physicians about lung cancer screening. Dr. David Sinetti is a pulmonologist. We also have Dr. Daniela Martin, who's a radiologist. You can join in with your questions about lung cancer screening, 800-642-1234. Mary Jane is with us from Pewaukee this morning. Hi, Mary Jane. What would you like to say?
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Okay. I'm 79 years old and a non-smoker. And in my lifetime, I've been married to two smokers long-term. And I lost both of them due to lung cancer that had metastasized to the brain. And they were being treated for, in each case, they were being treated for bad headaches. And I find smokers are very cavalier about their habit and say, oh, well, you got to die of something. I might as well go by lung cancer. And they don't realize that some lung cancer cells can go through the blood-brain barrier and up to the brain. And that's how both of my husbands died. And it was awful for the family, the children. And I think people need to know more of what can happen. Another thing that happened is I, as a non-smoker, had a concern about secondhand smoke. I developed lung nodules, and I found out they couldn't be biopsied because they were too small. So I had to wait 3 months before it could be assessed again. So there's just all of these peripheral things that I think people don't know, and I want everyone.
Yeah. Mary Jane, appreciate you bringing your story forward, and sorry for your losses. Dr. Martin, before we talk about secondhand smoke, how does lung cancer spread?
Well, lung cancer spreads, it starts locally, right? Every lung cancer is different. Some of them grow very slow. Some of them are a little more aggressive. They start to spread around the lung, around the same, the lung parenchyma that is around that. And then they usually, the first place that they will go to are the lymph nodes that you have in your lung. And after that, they might go into the blood and spread to other parts of the body.
Other organs.
Yes.
Dr. Sinetti, what can you say about the spread and how rapid is it?
That's a good question. And unfortunately, it's hard to predict for any given cancer. Lung cancer spreads as described, usually from the lung parenchyma as a starting point, spreading to the local lymph nodes within the chest. And then from there, it can spread to any number of different organs like the brain, as our caller had described, or the liver, or the adrenal glands, or the bone being some of the most common locations that you might find metastasis.
Yeah, Mary Jane also brought up secondhand smoke. What should we know there?
Yeah, secondhand smoke, thankfully, is not as significant a risk for lung cancer. Really, primary exposure to smoke, being the smoker, is the overwhelmingly biggest risk for lung cancer. Over 90% of lung cancers can be attributed to just smoking. But the risk is much, much, much lower with secondhand smoke, even if you've lived with a person for your entire life. If your parents smoked and your spouse smoked, your risk is substantially less. And as a result, you wouldn't actually be eligible based upon these guidelines for lung cancer screening.
We are discussing lung cancer screening with physicians David Sanetti and Daniela Martin from UW Health. When lung cancer is detected at an early stage, it's more likely to be cured with treatment. Are you someone who has never smoked? Do you think lower risk groups should get routine screenings? Who should pay for routine lung cancer screenings? Is it smokers? Is it the tobacco industry? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're discussing lung cancer screening and new guidance from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force advising yearly CT scans to a growing category of current and former smokers to find cancer earlier, to save more lives. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The new guidelines lowers the age when screening should start from age 55 to 50, and it reduces the pack-a-day smoking history from 30 years to 20. Do you fall into the new category of recommended screening? Have you had repeat lung cancer screenings? What was it like to wait for results? Join in 800-642-1234. We have UW Health physicians who are with us, pulmonary care specialist David Sanetti and thoracic radiologist Daniela Martin. Dr. Martin, Rachel called from Milwaukee, couldn't stay with us. Rachel says that they've heard of mucus plugs and they understand they were found on Rachel's CT scan. Rachel is not even a smoker and wonders, are mucus plugs in lungs worrisome?
Not really. We see them very, very often. And it just means that you're producing a little bit more of mucus than expected. It could be related to asthma, for example, people that have small airway diseases. It may mean that you had an infection in your lungs recently, and that's kind of what's left. So I think the most important thing will be to understand why she had the chest CT. But secretions in the airways are normal. Mm. We have them normally to clear our airways, so they don't become cancer.
Dr. Sanetti, how would you clear them or drain them?
Yeah, mucus plugs are very common, as Dr. Martin described. And are often very transient. And so many times we'll see a mucus plug on initial imaging and then in a follow-up scan, there'll be complete resolution. And so clearance of mucus plugs happens each and every day as we cough, as we clear our throat, deep breathing, exercise can help clear mucus plugs. And for patients that have underlying lung disease and are predisposed to mucus plugs, we have some different breathing techniques or exercises, you might call them, to further facilitate clearing of mucus plugs.
Would mucus plugs at all lead to a lung cancer diagnosis, Dr. Sanetti?
So, you know, good question. Mucus plugs are very different than lung cancer. Mm. However, mucus plugs can sometimes look like cancer on an initial screen. And so a mucus plug might trick us into thinking there's a nodule in the lung. It might prompt another CT scan 3 or 6 months down the road. But mucus plugs, like I mentioned, are often very transient. And that follow-up CT scan, if a mucus plug was first identified, would almost certainly be gone. We'd be able to provide a lot of reassurance to the patient based upon that repeat CT scan. And the risk for cancer is really zero related to a mucus plug.
Dr. Martine, we keep talking about false positives. What about false negatives? Do those occur?
Very rarely.
Okay.
You can get a normal chest CT or like do lung cancer screening and it may be normal. And next time you get a lung cancer screening, we might find something that is cancer. We just were not able to see it originally. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there may be an error. There is always that possibility. But it is extremely low. Very, very, very rare that that happens.
We have another question here from Don in Oconto Falls. Wants to say that CT scans use radiation, which is known to cause cancer. And Don is wondering, could an MRI be used instead to screen for lung cancer? Dr. Cinetti.
That's a great question. I'll take a stab at this, but Dr. Martine may be able to provide more information. MRIs are great for a lot of things, particularly skin, soft tissue, structures. They don't use radiation, so you're right that there's not a risk for cancer related to an MRI. But unfortunately, the lungs are not really well seen on an MRI. We don't get the same resolution from a CT as you get with on an MRI as you get from a CT. And so currently the technology with MRI is not good enough to allow us to effectively screen for lung cancer.
Dr. Martine, how far have CT scans come in terms of the radiation exposure?
Yeah, no, that's a great question and something that always comes up. So like Dr. Sonetti said, MRIs don't use radiation. Chest CTs do get radiation. But as you recall, when you talk about lung cancer screening, we talk about a low-dose chest CT. Low-dose meaning it uses about 70% less radiation than a normal chest CT. So we have optimized these studies to use very, very, very little radiation. It's a little bit more than a chest x-ray. It's about the equivalent, I would say, of 15 x-rays. But it's not that big of a number. To put it into perspective, when you get a low-dose CT, that's about the same amount of radiation that you get from living on Earth for 6 months. So we are all exposed to radiation from the sun, from the environment. So the dose is really, really small.
The dose is small. How would it compare to like a PET scan or other types of scans?
Definitely. This is probably the lowest amount of radiation compared to every CAT scan that exists of the chest, right? A PET scan definitely has a lot more radiation because of the chest CT and because of the injection of substances in your body that are also active. So it does, it's much, much smaller.
We're taking your questions about lung cancer screening. We have Dr. Daniela Martine and Dr. David Cinetti. They're a thoracic radiologist, Dr. Martine, and Dr. Cinetti is a pulmonologist. And you can join in with what you want to know about lung cancer, 800-642-1234. Anna from La Crosse sent us an email, and Anna, who has smoked filterless cigarettes for about 19 years, quit in 1987 on New Year's Day, to be precise. That's over 34 years ago. Anna is 67, doesn't have any health issues, exercises, walks every day, doesn't take any meds. And Anna wants to know, Dr. Cinetti, whether she should get screened.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we know that your risk of cancer declines the further out from tobacco exposure you are. And so having quit smoking over 34 years ago, your risk for cancer at this point is very low. And you would not be eligible to undergo low-dose CT scanning as a result.
Are there symptoms, Dr. Sanetti, for lung cancer that people should be, you know, on the lookout for?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, unfortunately, the symptoms for lung cancer present very late in the course of disease. And so the idea for screening that we're talking about today is to catch lung cancer before it's symptomatic, in the very, very early stages where there are more treatment options and the overall prognosis is better.
Yeah. So, Dr. Martine, you know, we've talked so much about CT scans. Are there other lung cancer screening methods that are under development?
That's an excellent question. As of right now, the best and the only proven effective method that saves lives is low-dose CT. In the past, people used to do chest radiographs, and they will test your saliva too for abnormal cells. But when lung cancer screening was created, that came from a lot of studies that compare all of these methods. And the most effective method by far is chest CT. And it has, it's like we said, it's very easy to do and fast, with very little radiation. So this is by far the most effective method that we have.
Dr. Sanetti, if someone has a long history of smoking but isn't over 50 yet, could they still get a screening, or should they talk to their physician about, you know, being more assertive about getting a lung cancer screening?
Yeah, that's a great question. Right now, we have data that supports the use of lung cancer screening in really only the highest risk individuals, patients 50 to 80 years old with a 20-pack year or more history of smoking. If you are outside of that window, it is not clear, or we do not have the evidence to say that this is an effective, safe way to screen for lung cancer. And so at this time, somebody less than 50 years old, even with an extensive smoking history, would not be eligible. But for that person, what I would say is that the best thing that they can do for their health to prevent problems with lung cancer in their life is to quit smoking. That is the number one way to prevent cancer.
We are learning about lung cancer screening, what's involved, the new guidance to expand eligibility, with UW Health physicians Dr. David Sanetti and Dr. Daniela Martine. Did you get a false positive on a cancer screening? What was that like? Have you undergone a lung biopsy, or maybe you've had a lung transplant? What do you want to say about early detection? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about lung cancer screening and early detection with new guidance from a task force of medical experts who seek to expand the pool of people who are eligible for screening. That means more women and more African Americans becoming eligible under the expanded criteria. It was last updated in 2013. Some estimates put the number of people eligible for screening at 14.5 million, up from 6.4 million under the previous guidance. UW Health Specialist Daniela Martine and David Sanetti, they stay with us for 10 more minutes. Dr. Sanetti, we heard from Steve, who sent us an email, and Steve wants to know, do any health insurance companies object to or deny coverage or payment for a higher frequency of lung cancer screenings under these new recommendations?
Yeah, that's a great question, and a very hard question to answer. This type of screening is supported by the Affordable Care Act, and is therefore widely accepted and covered by probably almost every insurance company, but I can't necessarily speak to the policies for each and every insurance carrier in the country.
Do you have a rough estimate, ballpark, how much a low-dose CT scan would cost?
We do. I can give you a rough estimate for a scan at UW Health right now. We've been working very hard to make this affordable and accessible. And right now, the out-of-pocket expense for somebody who does not have insurance coverage would be approximately $150.
Dr. Martine, are you concerned that due to the pandemic, people are putting off these lung cancer screenings, these CT scans?
Yes, that is an excellent question, and something that we also worked really hard last year. So at the very beginning of the pandemic, I think almost every hospital in the country was overwhelmed and tried to stop all non-emergent care, including screening exams. But we realized that even if you don't get scanned, that doesn't mean that people are not going to go on with their lives, and if they continue to smoke, may develop lung cancer. So about, I would say about mid-July, like last year, mid-year, all the screening exams were resumed in most hospitals. And we are working, and I think everyone is in the country, to do things as safe as possible for the patients and for the staff, and follow every guideline to keep everyone safe. So we resume screening after a few months, and I think that's what's encouraged, because the whole purpose is to try to find things early, and the longer we wait, that might not be the case.
Do you anticipate the volume of scans increasing under this new guidance?
I hope so. Yes, we all hope. I think what we're doing here today is fantastic, helping spread the word. Like you said at the beginning, lung cancer screening hasn't been out that long compared to other screening exams like mammograms, like colonoscopies, right? These have been out for decades. And lung cancer screening hasn't been done for more than 10 years. So a lot of people don't know about it. So helping spread the word that there is an exam that saves lives, we hope to see more people getting screened.
Let's bring in Suzanne now in Sun Prairie with a question. Hi, Suzanne. What would you like to ask?
I'd like to ask, when you have the low-dose CT scanning done, if you're a smoker, can they tell if you have emphysema in your lungs?
Dr. Sanetti?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer, the short answer is absolutely yes. You can detect and see evidence of emphysema. That would be considered one of those sort of incidental findings, among many other incidental findings that you might run into while having this type of detailed imaging of your chest.
Is that, Dr. Martine, something that you run into when you do these scans, that you see other things, you know, besides something that looks like lung cancer?
Oh, absolutely. This exam is very detailed. So we are able to see your lungs, but we are able to see everything that is inside your chest. A lot of other organs like your heart, your thyroid gland, a little bit of the upper abdomen. So we do, like Dr. Sonegi said, we find emphysema, we find lung abnormalities, but we also can find abnormalities in other parts of the body. And sometimes those things can help. For example, something that we see a lot in smokers is coronary calcium, calcifications in the coronary arteries, which are a risk factor for cardiac events. So people might not know that the patient has them. So sometimes when we add, the information that we add is positive. And sometimes you find things that we didn't know that they were there. And like Dr. Sanevi said, we tend to make recommendations. And the American College of Radiology is working on having standardized recommendations. So so people know what to do when we find things in other organs.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Daniela Martin, who is a thoracic radiologist. Dr. David Sinetti is a pulmonologist. We're discussing lung cancer screening. Laura is joining us from Marshfield. Hi, Laura. What would you like to ask?
Good morning. My husband was a three-pack-a-day smoker, and I was not a smoker. But should I be considered at a high risk for being scanned?
Laura, thank you for that. And as you said earlier, Dr. Sinetti, secondhand smoke is a much lower, a lower concern.
Yes, correct. And so even with that history of living with somebody who was a three-pack-a-day smoker, the caller's risk for cancer is substantially lower than her husband's would have been. And she would not therefore be considered in this high risk group of patients that are eligible for low dose CT scan lung cancer screening.
In our last minutes here, I'm wondering, Dr. Martin, as you look at the scans of patients who have COVID-19, are you seeing evidence of lung damage?
Well, the moment that they have the active infection, we do see a lung injury that is very characteristic. As time progresses, the majority of people's lungs go back to normal. But we do have seen a few small percentage of patients that may get a little bit of scarring, if I will give it a word, or, mm-hmm. Like a little bit of a lung injury that hasn't cleared away, or it may take them longer to clear. So unfortunately, there's a small amount of people that do get longer term damage in the lungs.
Dr. Sinetti, what are you seeing in terms of lung damage and scarring?
Well, this group of patients has a high exposure history to cancer or to smoking. And we know smoking is a leading cause for emphysema. And so it is quite common to see patients that have lung nodules also have some element of emphysema and sometimes scarring related to that.
Thank you both for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Dr. David Sinetti and Dr. Daniela Martin, they're from UW Health. They specialize in interventional pulmonary care and thoracic radiology, respectively. You can find a link to the new recommendations from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. It's at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.